Russell graduated from Columbia's Master of Fine Arts program in 2006. Her early stories were featured in the Best American Short Stories, The New Yorker, and other prestigious publications. Her first book of short stories, St. Lucy's Home for Girls Raised by Wolves, was published in September 2006. In November 2009, she was named a National Book Foundation's 5 Under 35 honoree. In June 2010, she was named a New Yorker 20 Under 40 honoree. Her first novel, Swamplandia, was published in February 2011 and was a finalist for the 2012 Pulitzer Prize. And now, there is Vampires in the Lemon Grove, a collection of intriguing stories that we'll discuss today with Karen. Welcome, Karen. It's so great to have you back with us on the Book Report.
Hi, Lane. I'm glad to be here.
Okay, first girl, you was robbed. The Pulitzer Prize belonged to you. It had your name on it. For shame, Pulitzer. But tell us a little about that incident.
Oh, well, it's funny. I forgot that we saw each other before any of that went down. It has been a wild couple years. I just feel a little like the Gumby life stretch, you know? I think I was very flattered. You know, there's no way not to feel honored to be on a list with Dennis Johnson and David Foster Wallace. That was incredible. And beyond my wildest, you know, that's like if we're going to be in a three-legged sack race where everybody falls over, that's the one I'm pleased to be part of. There's some fallout around it that was confusing, but net good. I think I was really honored that the nominating jurors, you know, put this alligator book up for that prize.
Well, I know I spoke with Juno Diaz after it happened, and he said he was very, very saddened to not have been able to award the prize.
Right. I mean, who knows? It's funny. I think the whole thing is still shrouded in mystery a little bit, even for me. But I do have to say that there was a period where I would have been so gratified writing this book. I was like, if anyone calls it a book, that has to be the triumph, you know? So what happened for Swamplandia already so far exceeded my expectations. But I did just feel kind of awestruck and grateful to these three nominating jurors. I think it was basically that. I couldn't believe that they would invite me to that party. So.
Well, you deserve to be there. But let's talk now about Vampires in the Lemon Grove. They are a collection of stories. Are they intertwined in any way?
I think thematically they're linked. So this first collection really was more geographically linked in some ways. Also thematically linked, it tended to be about these weird adolescents in islands. You know, it's sort of a Florida Keys of the mind or something, like a lot of the swamps and oceans of South Florida. And in this new book, I think I felt like I had to strike out from Florida. They're sort of sent. Someone is set in Meiji era Japan. One features the president's ghost reincarnated as horses. There's sort of, I think, I hope, a lot of range. But some of the ratio of madness to the everyday that everyone in South Florida is so familiar with from birth, I think that that's definitely infected all of the stories.
You know, I have to say, I've been haunted by Reeling for the Empire, the one set in Japan. What was your inspiration for that story?
That's a weirder one, huh?
Yeah.
I think it's funny because now it's a little... The origin stories always feel a little bogus to me. I think I was synthesizing a lot of what I'd been reading. I'd been reading a book called Debt by David Graeber, and there was sort of a chapter on female debt slavery. And then I got interested in Meiji era Japan, which was this time of violent metamorphosis where the entire island is industrializing so rapidly. Just after 200 years of being this sleepy, feudal island, they're drawn into commerce with the West, and just that kind of... radical change, which strangely doesn't feel, it felt resonant, I think, because we're undergoing something similar right now, sort of cyber revolution or something. And then I started reading about these girls. I mean, their real story is as horrifying as anything I could come up with ever. These women who were sort of duped into becoming reelers or doing textile work, which they believe would be prestigious, these farmers who were in serious debt. So the girls go to these model mills that are modeled after Western textile plants. And it's sort of a familiar story that I think we're so inured to it that I wanted to try to find some new way to tell it. You know, these women, they say that the birth of feminist consciousness in Japan happened in some of these factories because the women collectively united and said, we cannot work 10-hour days in tubercular conditions with no sun.
Yeah. Right. And you also used the word metamorphosis, which in fact they do metamorphize, I guess you could say, from people into something else.
Yeah, they very literally metamorphize. I think I was thinking a little bit about what it would be to go from being a girl with an identity and a history to part of factory machinery. So to be transformed from a subject into that kind of object. And silk production is sort of fascinating. I really geeked out on researching, you know, the way that they unspin cocoons and feed them to these machines. I was thinking that in this sort of, it's just, I think, an exaggeration of what really happened, which is that these women's bodies were transformed into producers, you know, hooked up to these machines. And in this case, they become actual silkworms. And so they're spinning the silk from within and sort of feeding the silk to the machine.
Yeah, I kind of love that story. Now, the title story is a very different take on vampires. Vampires with heart and soul, I would say. Talk about that.
Well, Elaine, as someone who's in like a happy marriage, I feel like you know better than I do the happier way this could go. But these are vampires. They're monogamous vampires, very unsexy, not Twilight vampires. And I think it was curious to me to think about, we make each other this incredible promise. You know, when you get married, you say, till death do us part. And I thought, what a challenge for the vampire. These guys are in some sort of a purgatory in Italy. They've found this lemon grove where they're just kind of hanging out, trying to make good on their eternal pact to love one another. And it's just not going so well. I think for me, it was an opportunity. I mean, it sounds sort of so crazy, but I like these kinds of extreme, almost cartoonish situations. Sometimes it'll become a way for me to think through something real. So in this case, how does death transform our transient relationships to one another? What does that kind of commitment look like? What happens if you're a monster? I mean, in this case, the guy's like, oh, I don't have to drink the blood. I was thinking almost he's in the AA phase of his vampirism. He discovers that these were old stories. They lose their hold on him. And I think he's just in that teenage space or that liminal space between an addiction and something that is going to fulfill him. I mean, he still has all of his old appetite, but he hasn't discovered an answer. So I don't know. That seemed resonant that seemed kind of like a pretty universal problem.
We're speaking with Karen Russell on The Book Report. Speaking of something that I think is so symbolic, the way I took it anyway, the story of The Graveless Doll of Eric Mutis. To me, it felt like a very strong statement against bullying.
Oh, sure. It's funny, isn't it? I think when I was drafting that, I didn't have any kind of agenda. It was a sort of, I often that happens. I'll write the way a reader reads, where I just want to know what will happen next if given this set of circumstances. So these boys find my friend who is at Conjunctions, this fabulous journal of super weird fiction, wanted an urban story. And I don't know, I never really write. I'm always out in the swamp or the boonies or something. So I thought, what would happen if these kids found a scarecrow in the city park?
Okay, next question. How does a Florida girl like you get to write about the Nebraska prairie so convincingly?
Oh, I hope it's convincing. I really hope it's convincing. It's funny because I've never been there. I don't know if, as a Florida person, you feel the pull of the prairie in this way, too. But for me, it's like the moon. It's the most exotic landscape. I really, when I was a kid, fetishized farms. I love to go to Homestead, you know? Like, I thought agriculture was, you know, coming from, like, the Dayland Mall. I just thought it was the most amazing landscape. And I sort of love frontiers. So Florida's a definite frontier. So in a very strange way, I think it's connected to some of the stuff that I wrote about in Swamplandia, because it's this family under the hammer of extreme weather, really dependent on the weather, and these economic forces that they can't control for. And it's just my favorite story. I think as people arrive in a landscape with some basically good, pure intentions and virtuous American, you know, that this, we're going to work the land. And the slippery slide, the kind of the inertia that can happen whereby you become a monster.
The barn at the end of our term, are you in fact calling some of our president's horses asses?
Oh, man. Yeah, it was funny. I was talking about that story when, you know, at Barack and Romney. And yeah, that was a question I felt I flubbed. They were like, what kind of horse would Romney be? And I didn't have a great answer. So maybe let me know if you think of something, Elaine.
Horse of many colors.
Horse of many colors. I've had in mind for a long time this second novel set during sort of a, I don't know what to call it, fantastical historical mashup of the Dust Bowl drought. And then I've been working on this novella that's coming out in March. It's about an insomnia crisis.
Oh. What's the title?
It's called Sleep Donation. So Americans lose their ability to sleep. And there's a sort of American Red Cross analog. They're called the Slumber Corps. And you can donate dreams to an insomniac. So that's the...
All right. So any final thoughts?
It's such a pleasure to talk to you again and be back in Miami.
Thanks, Karen. Bye.
Thanks, Elaine.